Today, we're going to be talking about how AI is transforming ad agencies and how they need to transform themselves. Over the last century, agencies have been responsible for the most compelling campaigns and experiences that you see around you. They typically hire the most brilliant creative and strategic minds to push the boundaries of what's possible. But now, a lot of what agencies have offered has become built into software. Today, we're going to discuss what this means with our guest, JP Haleka, the CEO of PowerShift Digital, who has been training agencies on how to better leverage AI. So quickly before we get into that, let's look at what's been happening in the industry. In the first 2 months of 2024, we've already seen a massive push by the top agency groups to announce pretty significant launches for what are effectively AI platform plays. Companies like IBM have announced several initiatives that will systematize and offer their services almost as an agency as a service, including AI assistants who are trained to behave as IBM consultant roles. They can be tapped into by IBM consultants or clients as needed. Deloitte has announced a new platform with UiPath that will allow their clients to tap into an intelligent automation platform that will expedite their clients' access to digital transformation solutions and strategies. On the agency side, Publicist Group has been the first to market to announce their core AI product, which they say will make them a platform company, giving their employees and clients access to predictive analytics and market planning, giving an advantage that they claim will increase the effectiveness of the work that they do and not just efficiency gains. So although generative AI has made a lot of noise lately, it seems like a real race that isn't being discussed right now is these big agencies racing to build the AI OS that other agencies and clients work on top of, building self-service and client access level products that can create recurring revenue and value for these agencies. So Arpi, what are your thoughts on this race and the opportunities it opens up to smaller agencies or companies that have been hoping to displace some of these agencies?
Well, there's a couple of really interesting things in what you said. So number one, Deloitte and IBM are not agencies. They might have acquired a bunch of agencies. They're still not agencies. They're essentially large consultancies that de-risk major project initiatives. So it's really fascinating that they're really trying to take over this space. Number two is, you know, you have this other counterforce of self-service tools. So if you have these major consultancies trying to build tools to enable internal teams to have stronger outputs, and then equally so, you have all the softwares. This includes all the Adobe Suite. This includes Figma. This includes, you know, Meta and Google all trying to create self-service tools to enable the creation and delivery of creative. What room does that leave for agencies? What room does that leave for the creative process? I'm really fascinated to hear from JP because he started this whole AI journey just tinkering, exploring, pushing the limits. He's taking it from the perspective of creativity and what this can unleash. But on the back end, what's this going to mean for agencies? Is this the actual end of agencies that people have been calling for?
Yeah, and I don't think that there's necessarily a real fear that this will be the end of agencies. But I do think that this speaks to a really important note, which is that the idea of predictive analytics and, you know, if you own the market data, if you own the ability to understand what consumers need and want, then does that not make you at least on par or in the same ballpark as these creative agencies? So, you know, whether that means that the IBMs and the Deloittes will up their creative agency chops, or if there needs to be some sort of maybe hybrid meeting in the middle of these different groups.
I don't agree. You know, it's hard to believe that these tools are going to replace creative people. It's hard to believe that IBM can ever be responsible for creating a campaign that creates the next Coca-Cola. I have a hard time believing that some self-service tool that Meta has or that Canva offers is going to create a game-changing creative campaign out there. So again, I need to know what this means for us, because are we moving to a world that's all about de-risking, or is it about one that's expanding possibilities?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm super excited to hear JP's take on this as well.
Okay, let's hear from JP.
Hello, welcome JP. So JP is the CEO and founder of PowerShifter Digital and Trove Group. You are a startup founder of Luxie, a generative AI advocate and speaker. And you've been solving design, communications, and digital product challenges for the last 30 years, which when I first read that, I was shocked by. But you launched your digital agency PowerShifter in 2008. So I'm really excited to have you here. There's a lot that's happening in the shifting world of digital agencies and advertising and marketing agencies in general. And so I'm really excited to hear some of your thoughts on what's happening. And so maybe what I'll do is I will kick us off with a quote that I would love to get your thoughts on. So in doing research for talking with you today, one of the things that I found was actually from an article in 2017 by PwC, but I feel like it's still especially relevant today, or maybe even more relevant today in the race to leverage AI. So the quote is, "The lesson, superficial change characterized by ad hoc task forces being grafted atop the existing operating model isn't going to work. On the other hand, meaningful change that will better position the marketing giants strategically is a matter of not just regrouping functions, but fundamentally rethinking organizational and operational structure to better serve clients. Existing agency brands can't emerge from this process untouched, and new business units will need to be formed."
All right.
So let's start with that.
I think that what we are seeing successfully is quite the contrary. We are seeing ad hoc adoption of GPT and others, primarily GPT, ChatGPT. Let's just focus on the generative side of things. It is probably the single-handedly the biggest disruption to workforce in, we'll just say, in agency, probably, period, since the internet. One of the reasons why it's rapidly changing and so successful is because it's entering the workforce from the bottom up, because unlike things like Web3, blockchain, which still to this day are still trying to find a place in the world for utility and purpose for the average worker, average frontline staff. That's and what ChatGPT does and others like it is it helps you individually becomes a force multiplier for you. And so it's being brought in to organizations without permission because it works. And so that's why we're seeing it successful. So I think it will be ad hoc for quite some time. And CIOs and CTOs, they move slow for a reason, because there's safety, security, and all that good stuff. But so I think that on that side, I think there will be organizational units that sit across organizations, but I don't think agencies are going to necessarily spring up divisions of prompt engineers. I believe that'll be integrated throughout the entire agency. Everyone will need to know how to do a prompt and work with the stuff. So I think it's going to be bottom up, ad hoc to start, and I believe that it's going to be no one department that's in charge of it, unless there's under governance and whatnot, which will fall back to the CIO or the chief AI officer.
That's good. So all these tools, are they going to net out a positive long term? Are they going to expand productivity, increase, you know, reach, client potential, these kinds of things? Or is it going to put downward pressure, like you said, on value, pricing, competitiveness, all these things?
I think it's going to be bifurcated, or even I don't think it'll be one thing. It has to be, depends on how the agencies handle it, how they adopt it. And I've been an advocate for agencies for quite a few years to really work on your brand and work on the positioning and differentiation and the outcomes. So those that are down that path are going to do okay, because they already understand that. A lot of agencies that I've involved with still have the old model of, you know, retainers, hours, and whatnot. And so I think that model will crush some agencies for sure. I think the efficiencies are already there. As I said to our team of 25 last week, we have the ability to punch way above our weight now. And let's use the tools to do that. So I think smaller agencies will be able to achieve greater things. And I think there'll be some surprise as to the work that's being done when it's revealed that the agencies are considerably smaller than what they may have been in the past. is what I'm thinking. So I do see it I'm seeing it internally here as a big force multiplier.
That's great. Now, a lot of the big boys have been talking about rolling out their own internal products. Is that going to work? Is there something you see happening there? Or do you think it's going to be vendors moving the needle more than internal
builds? Well, that a couple of weeks ago, finished watching Publicist did their big year and with the creating
their core AI.
Yeah, core AI, which I found surprising for a large agency that does branding, that they couldn't have done a better job with the naming. But nonetheless, yeah. Core AI it is. You know, that concept is going to be what every organization from, I believe, any organization that's, you know, in the tech space or information space or creative space that has a lot of information, process, and IP. If you don't do that, I think that will be a challenge. I see organizations across the board, agencies and otherwise, moving to that model. Now, whether they can achieve it, I know that Publicist was pretty bullish on it. After I did check with some folks within Publicist that said that it's a long ways off than what was presented. But the concept of having one accessible database and using generative AI and other tools to be able to the natural language processing to get the information from historical or across departments, absolutely going to be the way.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because like the more that I looked into it, they've actually been working since 2018 on that, and they partnered with Microsoft in 2018 to start to build that, and it seems like they're still pretty far away. So I think some big questions will still come out about how to actually make that work. You know, and I think from the other side, the smaller agency side, it does seem like maybe there's more opportunity for smaller agencies to get their foot in more on like a, you know, a vendor level, like RP was saying. You know, at the end of 2023, the Wall Street Journal put out an article called "Will 2024 Mark the End of the Digital Agency?" And when I was looking into it, their thesis was that, first of all, just the term digital agency won't really exist anymore, but it seems like there was a big boom in these really small kind of studio digital agencies that happened last year. And that, you know, there's going to have to be a shift in how these agencies actually provide those things, like how they provide their services, how they provide the products that they build, because of this shift in capabilities and capacity, like you were saying about your own agency. And so I wonder, you know, what do you envision being those AI products or AI tools that will need to be built or will need to be created to make some of these smaller agencies more sustainable or continue to exist in this new world?
Well, some of the biggest challenges that agencies have is actually not on the creative side or the, you know, the design side, but on the organizational side, operations side. And that's where they kind of, it makes a lot of sense. Quite often those that create agencies are not from operations. They're the ones that are solving problems. And so what I'm seeing is that this will help in that, in operationalizing, can make a lot of the problems that just go away over time with automation and access to cross siloed information. For simple tools, even small agencies now, if you had a wiki on a platform that has an API, I'll take Notion for example, which is where ours is, and you use something like Slack or Teams, there are third parties now that third party applications that essentially connect into the API on the database of your wiki and then connect into Slack or otherwise that become GPT of all of your data that you have in there. So that can be done within 30 minutes if you already got those two platforms done, which we've tested. They work well. Small to large. We're building our own productization of what was shared with Publicist the other week. So we're building the ability to sell in large language models, accessing IP process, another company data, to be able to create that sort of oracle within the organization that has the natural language processing skills of GPT right now. So that's how much we feel that it's going to be a product that organizations, agencies, and others will need to get in the works.
This term, you know, assistant, oracle, gets kind of used a lot. I'm just wondering, like, what are some specific use cases where you're seeing the highest ROI on this? Like, what are some specific areas in agency life, both back end and front end?
Even to find the information, if you've ever gone into a wiki to get historical data or get client data, and you don't necessarily know what it's called, and it has to be, you know, very explicit. The large language models will mean access to the information for the entire organization as you need to be very quickly. So if you want to get a report, you don't necessarily have to go to somebody else to get it. You've got access to the database. You can describe the report that you're trying to find or describe the brief in much looser terms. So you don't have to be the expert and it'll find it for you. So I think speed and access to data will be what helps break down the silos. And then you're going to see a lot more individuals doing a lot more things that might be slightly outside of their normal day-to-day use as you would today. Not having to go somebody to get that, you just type it in and it comes up for you. So I think that's where a lot of the speed will be, is accessing the information.
Yeah. So outside of specific GPTs, what are some products that are exciting you, your team, and the agencies you're working with or in consulting? Like, what are some of the core products that you're seeing? Like, holy crap, I can't believe this exists. This is so transformative.
I was writing an article the other week saying that we've pretty much, when it comes to generative AI, image generation, that we're not going to see the gains made with image generation as we did in 2023. We are pretty much topped out. If you look at the way in which the technology works, it's getting near photographic. We're going to be moving into incremental innovation now, which is just basically adding features and getting revising the model and making it better. But we're not going to see the giant jumps that we did, which was like rudimentary in early 2023 to replacing product photographers by the end of the year. Essentially, product photography can happen now virtually and others. So this year, I was writing about that for image. And for 2024, I said by the end of the year, we would have the same for video. This was going to be the big year for video by the end of the year. And then they released Sora, the teasers for Sora last week, which brought my time horizon up by 11 months. And I also had two people text me within the film industry saying that they're going to have to look for another job. Now, I don't think that's the case. I can get into that. But I think just like CG didn't replace all movies, no matter how good it gets. There's still a weird uncanny valley that will happen. And we're going to still want to see real people with real emotions. If you look at the cutscenes in video games, they're amazing, but they still lack the emotion and subtlety. So I think there will be though that, but I think video is the biggest impact this year that we're going to see people jumping on board.
Yeah. So to your point about the conversation about taking jobs and all of that, I'm not going to go there, but you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about before is this idea of being able to use generative AI to do some of those marketing pieces, to, you know, to quickly and easily craft wireframes and start to do layouts and do some of the code. So if we consider that, you know, those tasks are becoming much easier and faster to do from an AI perspective, what do you see as being the value or the new time and expertise that designers, developers, strategists can take on in that world to continue to allow your agency to become more and more valuable?
The tasks that most people don't like to do will be removed. And so I like to look at generative AI. I like to look at it in this way, which is AI is just sitting there. It has no context. It has no emotion. It has no reason to do anything until it's prompted to do so. So the spark of, you know, of creativity, the imagination, the imagine what's possible still needs to take place at the beginning. And if you, the barrier may be lower now as far as being able to have that spark. I think so it means getting more access to those with ideas. Example, a writer can now do illustrations and photography. If they're a good writer, they should be able to write good prompts. And if they've got imagination, which writers have. So I think you still need the human creativity at the beginning. Then the AI essentially is able to chase down more ideas, look at things more consistently, and becomes faster. Then on the far end of it, when that's done its job, you still need the humans to essentially do what I call the yes and, which is to add to it, because again, humans have context and creativity, imagination, and the what ifs. So I think it's bookended by the humans, and that the sandwich in the AI in the middle will basically expand. And I think what it'll do is you will get people that can spend more time on the last 20% of the work, which is what most people want to do, which is the gravy or the cream, I guess you could say, and get rid of the boring stuff. So for developers, putting all the fundamental code to just get the basic installation ready and the servers ready and all that, DevOps. I think DevOps is probably going to be reduced. Yeah.
So I'm wondering here, the role of agencies has always been, they're like the experts. They bring you a product you can't get anywhere else. Like, their role was always to bring expertise to the room that was unique, differentiated, special. What, if we look at that as the brief, what can we do? What kind of products are needed today, AI products, to amplify that even more?
I'm not sure that I know that picture is entirely clear yet. And then we just spent last year exploring what is AI or generative AI. And I think 2024 is the year where the rubber hits the road and we'll start to have a better picture. I don't think that picture is there yet. I think because we haven't hit the critical mass of the creatives actually using it yet to see the right signals of what they need. I think we're still deeply into the exploratory phase, and a lot of people still a little bit freaked out or in denial. And then there are those that are running with it. So I don't have an answer for that one just yet. I don't think the picture is entirely clear. We're still all trying to figure out what does that mean.
Are there any products on your team's wish list, like a product that you wish existed, something that solves something that you guys hate doing?
A lot of it's in the boring space. I think the creative side, we're still wanting to, still need to create. There's a thing in the mind that happens when you create, and prompting isn't quite the same. So I think, I don't know that there's a perfect product out there yet. I think the perfect product that we have for the development side is Copilot. And when we first introduced Copilot, the CTO, Kerry, introduced it, the team was a little reticent. And by the time that the trial was over, you would not be able to take Copilot away. And so that one is already, I think, in and of itself, is a little bit of a unicorn. From a product perspective and from an agency perspective, that one's there.
Are we talking the Microsoft Copilot? Just so people can understand, what are some of the core workflows it helps with?
Well, it starts to even mimic the style of your coding. Each coder codes slightly different. There's the way to code, but then you've got your own vectors in to solve problems by the combination of codes and frameworks. And this starts to see how you do it and anticipate and saves the time. We have... With our developers of, I think, around 8 to 10, we've added the output of 2 to 3 more people this last year with using Copilot. So that doesn't necessarily mean layoffs.
It's mind-blowing.
But that does mean slower hiring.
Okay. So at the beginning, Brittany touched on this, and you touched on this value-based. How do you build in a world where your powers are amplified through these super beans? Like, how do you bill now? Is it going to continue to be hourly? Is it going to be retainers? Is it going to be self-service?
Well,
like, what's
the one that I think is an interesting one that I've been noodling, which is not even value price, but value price plus, which is if we can get you into market 3 months sooner with the same quality, that's not just worth the value. That's also worth the value of the opportunity cost that's not then just been taken away. So I think that speed to market will mean that, and if an agency can do it right, you can actually charge a fee for that speed to market because you're getting them in there sooner. How does that math work out? work out with the client? What does it take? What if we got a new into market 6 months earlier? What would you potentially gain and be able to negotiate some kind of performance hit on that? I think that's where we'll be able to see some interesting aspects of it. Back in the old time, as I've been saying, as you said, 30, you know, been doing this a long time in the print world, if someone came into the agency and wanted something done quicker, it was always a surcharge. It always meant more money. They knew that. For digital, for some reason, and I never figured it out, if you did it faster, there was sort of this perception that it took you less to do, and there was no real need to or desire to pay extra. It just vanished. I think we have the ability to potentially bring that back. So faster means actually worth more.
So if I was trying to build product for an agency right now, a product that, you know, a SaaS product, should I focus on a KPI that's getting your services to market faster, or should I worry or focus on higher quality outputs? Because it sounds like so far a lot of the conversation is about productivity.
Well, those are not mutually exclusive anymore. You get the quality and the speed. So therefore, you still need the humans to be able to do the, what I call that yes and moment at the end, to be able to build upon it or to verify and validate that what is going out is of equal quality. But if you're not weighed down by the day-to-day tasks that take up that brain power, that means spending time on that 20%, you've got full capacity to do so. So I think that yes and will be what will make agencies differentiate between agencies.
Are there any examples of yes and products that you're loving right now? Perhaps
no, because I think it's still a new concept. I haven't heard it. I haven't heard it discussed. Everyone's still sitting in the force multiplier perspective, and I think that there's still this echo that's going on within the community of we can get it. It takes more less time, or it's still a bit of a wow moment. I don't know anyone's really formulating what does that yes and look like. I think. That I'm not sure too. Again, I don't have answers on a lot of things because it's such a rapidly changing space. Yeah.
And from the creatives that you've worked with, how are their feelings on what Adobe's been rolling out? Because I mean, obviously them and, you know, like an Autodesk and, you know, those guys are at the front lines in terms of having access, data, user reach, or even with Figma. Have you seen anything or heard anything of where they might be going? Anything that's useful, exciting, amazing, or terrible?
I think actually Adobe is a Me Too brand right now. They've been working with what they formerly called sentient AI in Photoshop and others. They're introducing generative AI, generative fill. Are they game changers? I guess in some ways, but ultimately they're just, I think, feature bloat and being stuffed in to keep up. I think that Adobe has got a real problem on their hands because of their price point. I think that's where they're going to find the pressure, is that there will be, in disruptive innovation style, more platforms that do what they do for far, far less and much faster. If you open up Photoshop or you open up Illustrator, you'll see a UI that is akin to 1995. It hasn't changed. And for example, I'll take one example of one of their biggest existential threats is to the Premiere, Adobe Premiere, which is their editing suite. You need to have at least two monitors to be able to function with it properly because of the way in which the layout works. Enter CapCut last year on the phone. It was created by the same folks that brought you TikTok. They produced it and distributed it for free because they wanted creators to be able to edit and create better content for their platform. So putting it out there for free, they just released about 4 months ago a desktop version. The whole model around how editing works has been completely upended. It still has a timeline and stuff. You can get around and move things around, and there's a lot of AI filters and AI features within it that not only threaten Premiere, but also threaten After Effects, and you don't have to hand cut stuff out. So I think that I think Adobe has got a real problem on their hands with their whole Creative Cloud, to be quite frank. And the fact that they couldn't buy Figma is another challenge for them.
So maybe let's do a bit of future casting here. So Figma was supposed to be rolled into the family. It was supposed to be the little hen that came into the nest. What can they do now that they've been unshackled? Because when I look at it, when they have access to all these design systems, and all the collaboration tools they have baked into it, I could see some immense Gen AI opportunities. What do you see happening in the Figma and Figma community world?
I think that I think things like copy, colors, being able to, I think you're going to get what I'm calling the sidekick or co-pilot aspects of Gen AI, which is you all have a, in each platform or product, you have a chatbot that does a lot of heavy lifting. You ask it to do things. So I really think that you'll be able to, there'll be a situation where you want to change the color scheme of your entire set of mocks for a website, and you want to quickly look at maybe what a pastel theme looks like. Copilot installed, you could have it with a good prompt, describe the what you're looking for, and it would then globally change all of the colors and all of the. So I think that you're going to see that continuing to grow inside of the platforms, the sidekick, and being able to describe what you want to see it, and then have the send the actions off to the back end to then execute on it. We're seeing that already with Shopify's sidekick, which you can change the liquid HTML and CSS within a few keystrokes. These are individual business owners now that can now not have to go back and get the templates done with the developer. So I think sidekicks and being able to direct a lot of things that you want to see globally changed, fonts, changed all of the fonts, H1s and 2s, just describing it. I think that's where you're going to see it integrated. And
what about somebody like Canva? Because Canva's got huge adoption. They got that bottom end of the market, which is worth a lot. What could they start doing? Are they going to start doing like copywriting? Are they going to start building out the entire end-to-end?
So Canva's the other existential threat to Adobe, and Adobe's known that for quite some time. They've tried to put in a product in place, Adobe Express, years ago, which is a mess. It's been reiterated tons of times. And that was a direct counter to Canva. I believe that within the next year, you're going to see Adobe taking the money that they were going to put towards Figma and look to buy Canva, because again, that is taking a lot of, I think that's a big threat. You can Canva right now, you can already use it for the default, like help me with headlines and all that. That's just like sort of the basics that are being installed on a lot of platforms. That's already and I think that where we're seeing AI is also in Canva with motion. You can describe the motion you want, and it does video now. So Canva's doubling down, and they're the same thing. It's a bit of a sidekick, being asking it to do the same thing through words and then have it execute.
That's exciting. I mean, is there any other use case that you're really just like desperately wanting something to come out for? Anything in the back office?
I think it would be great to see something that was sort of like If This Then That or Zapier, where you could connect multiple platforms and have AI in the middle that would then be able to go to the different platforms and be able to understand each of the way in which they work. So you could actually use generative AI or a sidekick across platforms. They're out there. They're still kind of funky, but I think that would be the greatest, because right now you still need to go from one platform to the next. Even if you're using Zapier, wouldn't it be great to have one place that you could do a lot of the work, one window, one context frame, and it brought in all of the different heavy lifting that each one of the platforms does? That would be super useful.
Yeah. So what happens to the paradigm of the agency if those tools are so easy to access that your client can use them?
Well, that was really the epiphany that I had last week when I saw Sora and a few others, which was actually first time that I started to sweat on this very topic, really sweat, which was, yeah, in-house. In-house, I believe now will be the biggest threat to agencies, bigger than the downward pressure of pricing. I just think that a lot more of the lower, a lot of the marketing production, let's call it production, maybe not the big ideas, but Canva solves the problem of production for a lot of people without AI. You add AI in to it, and there'll be platforms like Canva where, it's still limited. There's things you just can't do. You still need to go to After Effects or InDesign. But I think that it'll be those tools that bring in low-level production. I think higher-end production still needs to go to the agencies. So, again, with agencies, you need to focus on the really hard stuff, the really big ideas, the really big thinking that won't necessarily happen. Now, the other problem that having that in-house has, and we've been through this cycle a few times, like in the mid-2010s, there was a big pulling everybody in-house, bringing all these innovation teams and whatnot. But one of the things we get from clients when they knock on the door is, you guys are out there touching a lot of different industries. You're seeing a lot of different trends. When you work in a large organization, whether you've got AI or not, you're still going to have the biases in the echo chamber within. And so I think agencies still need to perform the role of being able to be the ones that are, whether they're using AI tools or not, to be exploring the different verticals, the different things, and the different curiosities, that because that's an agency's role. In-house, you don't usually have time to be curious. You're stacked. And there's pressure for the shareholders to get stuff done. So I think we'll still be the ones that are the ones out there looking and bringing in fresh ideas outside of the biases within in-house.
If the big agencies and big consultancies are building self-service tools, if self-service is becoming like an actual service group, where's the room for agencies? Are agencies going to be a delivery mechanism, you know, about getting things to market? Or do you think creativity is just going to spark again in a way which hasn't been for a really long time?
I think creativity and ideas is still, you know, is still going to be important. I think anybody that's using low level, that's more doing more production, the monthly retainers to do, you know, direct mail or to do newsletters, I think those agencies will fade. I believe those services that can be great moneymakers for agencies and behind the scenes production, which is never on the website under the portfolio, those have typically been what keep the margins going. And then the big projects, the ones that everyone loves to put into portfolios, those don't come every day. They don't pay the rent. It's the stuff behind the scenes. So I think that will be where you'll feel pressure is in the unglamorous stuff that we're at task to do because they don't have the headcount internally, not even about the skills, but it's usually around headcount. And so I think that'll be a big impact for agencies is the lower level work.
Yeah. So you're a serial entrepreneur, right? Like, so what's your next venture going to be then? You're going to dive into AI or are you going to go more hands-on, I know you're in watches, you're in leather goods. Are you trying to have like a recoil effect from tech, or are you going to dive further in?
Well, personally, from a creative side, I definitely have explored using image generation for my own hobbies. But the agency, instead of looking for startups, we've got two productized AI offerings in the works. And that we're going to release in the coming weeks. In fact, we're going to release the first one. Now, in that process, so that's an entrepreneurial aspect, I guess you could say. The process of getting that product to market or the productization, I used several tools. So typically for a startup or for a product line, you want to go and do either a value prop or a business model canvas, right? That can take several days for one person, or if you've got a few, it can take even more. I decided that I was going to try and many AI tools to go from concept to in market to see how quickly that it would go. And I wanted to make as few edits as possible just to see what is the consistency. So I did business model canvas with a GPT that someone had in the marketplace, trained on business model canvas. I put in a prompt that was pretty a pretty lengthy one as to the product that we wanted to create. I didn't have to overly describe the product or its benefits, to be quite frank. I got the output. I tweaked it a little bit. I put it into the Miro board and I got my business model canvas that I would say was 90% what I would have got to within 3 days, within 30 minutes. I then, in the same context window, said, I need to position this. It gave me the benefits. It gave me who we're going to need to sell to, the channels we're going to sell to. It only missed two personas for us. We went in and we added HR and marketing that it missed. Everything else was pretty intact. Then I said, I want to create a 5-panel LinkedIn slide carousel to help launch this. Please take the benefits that you created from the positioning and create the problem statements that those would that solve, and then create ad copy to spice up the benefits. That took another 30 minutes. Now, we did go in and do, again, the copy was 80% ad copy. The headlines, our creative director and I went in and spent another couple hours making them right. But that nonetheless took 4 or 5 hours tops. We then took the problem statements and the benefits and went to Midjourney and put them into Midjourney with a reference photo. You can now reference a photo, what I call the art director photo. And I created the slides, I don't know, maybe an hour, two. And they look spectacular. Then I take those, put them together in Canva to create the slides. I then went to something called Reloom, which is a AI wireframing and site tool, described the landing page that wanted. It then generated the landing page with non-code code that could be copied and pasted or actually sent over to Figma. So once it was sent to Figma, I then took those final art-directed slides with the copy. That was my brief to the designer. That was it. 10 a.m. briefing, 3 p.m. we had the mocks in Figma because the wireframes are essentially a component library. Very small tweaks. And then within 3 days after that, we had the site live. So 1 week, three people, as opposed to what would have taken me 1 month, maybe 3 weeks, 4 or 5 people. That is what is achievable.
So your experiments have really paid off. You're one of the first people I saw really just trying to dig into these Gen AI programs to figure out how they can improve your workflows, expand what you're capable of, and get things done faster. And clearly those results have paid off. But what does this mean in terms of like the culture of organizations? What does it mean for how agencies might or might not be structured? What does it mean for the relationship with clients? And there's just so many questions that it raises, doesn't it?
I think another, I mean, we don't know where society is going to go. There's going to be a portion that want the speed. They're going to want to see the cost savings potentially. But I also, because I'm a creative, you know, was thinking about like with my involvement with Midjourney, which was from version 2, as it got better and better, I mean, I can design. I'm a great photographer. I was wondering, I can create these things in seconds that look spectacular. But what's the value? Is there a value versus me doing it by hand? And I think there is. And I think that, in, you know, we're at this huge creator economy that's out there where, that, you know, partially due to COVID and what have you, working from home and people being laid off, but the creative economy is growing and people are buying things that are handmade because they know the story. So I believe that the stories and the contexts and the reasons why are going to need to be more highlighted for the value. And I think that there will always be those that want the discount versions, right? You can get in an analog version of that, you know, you can get a fake Andy Warhol that's been painted in a factory by somebody for, you know, $1 a day. And you can get it in a mall and it looks hand painted, but it's not a Warhol. It's not that, you know, that's an ethical thing. You can do now with GPT. Warhols are still worth what Warhols are still worth. So if you take that and move it down to the next level down, I think the story of handmade, and one of the reasons why you see so many makers on YouTube and on Instagram showing you the process is because that process helps them move the margin from 75 to 150. Yeah.
So it's very clear then that Gen AI has made creativity more accessible, that it's easier for anyone to be involved in more parts of the creative process. But what does this mean on expanding what good is, defining what good is, training people on what good is, or really just exploring the realms of possibility of what might work, what not, which is really the role of agency? Can Gen AI do that? Or is this the wrong tech, really?
That will come into, that will be less generative AI, and that'll be more machine learning. And so as long as they've got access to, you know, there's a couple of things that need to happen with that. Not only do you need to have access to train the model on what is good, you need to train the model on what it, why it's good, in which context it's good, and what are those proof points, right? Beyond subjectivity. So if you say, oh, there'll be a successful creative director, what are all the things that make a successful creative director? And you're going to have to get all that history. So as long as you've got the history, the context, the why, it is possible to narrow it down quicker. But ultimately, at the end of the day, humans being humans, there's that subjectivity. I mean, we've already seen this with copy, right? When we look at A-B testing with copy, for years we've had copy AI copy tools that increase conversion rates times, 100 times, because they've been able to take all of the data from the ad media buys to know in context for selling cars to this demo, these are the ads that worked, or this was the framing that worked, or these were the colors that worked. So ultimately that's been in place for a while, but I think we could see it get to where you're talking about on the human level.
So when it comes to hiring in the near-term future, do you believe that agencies should be more focused on the humanistic attributes and skills people can bring to the table, or the technical talent?
The curiosity is really what drives agencies. It's not just talent, right? It's the curiosity. Without curiosity, if you only have talent, okay, sure. But if you don't have, you have to marry the two, the curiosity and the talent. I think it's the merriment of those two that will keep agencies relevant. Now, maybe that's done, more is done with less people, or maybe it's in market faster, but I don't see, I think there will be a reduction of more of the lower revenue production type of agencies.
Well, thank you so much, JP. This has been great. And everyone make sure to follow his experiments and adventures in his LinkedIn articles.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast, The Design of AI, on Apple or Spotify, or visit our website, designof.ai.